The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Johnson, and I am joined by the storyteller. I remember that nickname at least, Mo. Josh may be joining down the line, but Mo, how the hell are you? How are you doing today?
I'm good. Last night I had some plans. I was planning to watch All or Nothing when I got home, and it was supposed to be about 10 instead of being about 11:45, and I still watched it. I just had to, so, you know, right till 4 in the morning, and then I couldn't sleep afterwards. I was thinking about the show, so I had a mid-afternoon nap, but I'm here. I'm good now, man, and yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to talking about the show. It was interesting. Let's call it interesting. I know it's a divisive show, so I'm curious as to how you feel, and if Josh should happen to be able to join us for a few minutes talking about it with him.
I'm curious as well. The first thing I want to get to before, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but the tragic passing. We finished recording a show, the AEW preview, and I swear 20 minutes later, Ray Phoenix was pulled out of Double or Nothing, and then the news about Hannah Morkey, or my pronunciation is always the worst, but a young Japanese professional wrestler at the age of 22, from all indication, had taken her life due to a myriad of reasons stemming from a reality show.
Hannah Kimura, I believe, is the pronunciation.
You're saving me again. I've done a little bit of research on this because I know some people are like, well, this seems like a very extreme reaction to just some negative comments online. And from what I gathered, she from listening to Post Wrestling, which is run by John Pollock and Wei Ting, which I have tremendous respect for both. They had a fellow on that revealed that she was getting harassed because she was of mixed descent in Japan. Not being fully Japanese in Japan is apparently a very tough thing. I never knew that. That was news to me.
What's her other ethnicity?
Indonesian, I believe. So she was from what was relayed via this show and talking to John Pollock, she took a lot of heat for that. And there was the heat from an incident that happened within the reality show called Terrence House. And just there were tweets and images of self-harm, and it just was a very, very tragic situation. I didn't realize this, but I actually got to see her wrestle in MSG. I didn't know. Like I didn't put two together until Ring of Honor retweeted the video, and I was like, oh my god, I saw her live. That makes this almost even more trippy. Just a 22-year-old that this didn't need to happen, and they addressed this on Double or Nothing, and I think Excalibur said it best. It's like, mm-hmm. We should be nicer to one another. It's mm-hmm.
Excalibur did. He said it very well. I saw the incident from the Terrence House. I mean, apparently she posted this news, and it was essentially like a suicide note on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. And it's the middle of the night because it's 4 in the morning. Apparently she took her life, in Japan, but Kari Sane saw it because she's, you know, not in Japan, and called the office for Stardom, and somebody went over there, and it was too late. And I mean, it's just she was getting about 100 messages a day of people negative on her. It's amazing because these aren't real people. You know, it's the internet. None of this is real. These are people who are just words on a screen, but it is so powerful to people, especially if they have other things going on in their lives or mental health issues or whatever else is happening. So just the saddest story. 22 years old, extremely talented.
Oh.
And it's funny. If she hadn't done this, I know if she was 32 years old and she could go back to herself at 22, she'd tell herself, don't do this because it will get better. You will get past this. And that's the thing for the people in this situation. It will get better. You will get past this. But people who commit suicide, like 95% of them, it's not that they don't want to live or it's not that they want to die. It's that they don't want to live.
Okay.
You know, there's a significant difference. Not that they want to die. They don't want to live. Sunny's comments that she was weak for killing herself just clearly looked like an attempt to get herself back in the public eye, certainly reveal what a horrible human being she is if we needed any further proof.
I didn't hear this story at all. You're breaking this to me.
Oh, yeah. Sunny, yeah, she... Yeah,
from Sunny Days?
Sunny Days, yeah, Sunny, yeah, from Hall of Famer Sunny. She said that, you know, just implied that she was weak because she committed suicide. And that's disgusting, too. Excalibur said it very well. It was heartfelt. I was glad they had something for Shad Gaspar, and I was glad they had something for Hannah Kimura. This is the saddest possible. This one feels so sad because this is just, you know, Shad Gaspar, that's a horrible accident. But this is totally preventable. Accidents happen. They suck, but it happened. But this is completely unnecessary.
You hear this story, and I'm not going to sit there and say that I followed her career. I had any idea. But you hear this happen, and I think the main things you hear is a 22-year-old talented individual who was on the rise in her career was cut short because people decided that they needed to relentlessly harass her. And I've heard some arguments saying, well, you know, some generations are this generation is soft and the other generations are tough. And I think it's completely different. I don't think you can compare generation to generation because that generation didn't have social media.
It's a completely different thing. You don't know what it was like to live her life. It's people that they don't know what it was like to live her life. To go through the things, whatever she had to go through. And she probably did. I mean, the guy on Tara's house, like I say, I saw it. I mean, it was a mistake. Terrible mistake, very unfortunate. I don't believe, she probably overreacted. That's true. I've had people overreact on me too. And it doesn't mean you go back at them for the next what she did, okay, she overreacted, but that's between them. It's not for all these other people to get involved and get their opinion and slam down on her. That's between her and the person, the people in that house. And sometimes it's like you can watch things, but like mind your own business, dude. It's a TV show. Watch it. You can have an opinion, but but to me, I mean, that's probably why I'm not very active on social media. It's just not real to me anyways.
Yeah.
So for me, I have trouble wrapping my head around how much it does hurt people, but it does.
It's like I've definitely taken a step back. I still have all the platforms that you would have, but I don't post nearly as often. It's more to stay in contact with different people, like either using Messenger to talk with you or using Instagram to talk to a friend or Twitter will be the occasional bit of news. but it's when you're in a profession like professional wrestling that you're working towards an audience reaction. You're working to that audience giving you something. It becomes your main driving force. And I feel like in some ways, being a performer, you're more sensitive to what people say. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with constructive criticism. I think constructive criticism can be helpful, but to go out of your way to just troll and tell people that.
The thing is, who's not allowed to make a mistake and get angry or do something stupid that you would regret later at 22 years old?
I know. That's the thing. She's 22.
She's allowed she screwed up. She's allowed to screw up at that age because we all are, because we're human beings. We're not going to be perfect.
No, and that to me is just, it just is very, this whole thing shows a total lack of empathy towards her in a lot of ways. Because you go, hey, you made a mistake. You know what? You're going to learn from this. It might not be right away because you're young, but eventually you will learn and go, oh, I should have handled it this way. And then you'll progress forward in life. Instead, you got harassed and it all played out the way it did. And you can just see the outpouring from the wrestling community of anyone that had met her or involved with her. And it just seems like there's a lot of really good stories about her out right now. And there's a lot of people like, if I'd known, and that's such a common thread, had I known, I would have reached out. And that's like one of the things that was asked is, what was she like? Like, did she show any signs of these? And there were no. She seemed very confident. She seemed very charismatic. And so it goes to show that we just don't know what's going on behind someone's eyes.
Absolutely don't know what's going on. What you're seeing or hearing, the confidence that is, people wear masks.
Yeah.
People wear masks. Really, it's about the saddest story I can ever imagine, honestly. Yeah. It just heartbreaking.
It's terrible. Thoughts and prayers to that family that's got to be going through just absolute hell right now, in a time where things are already on the brink of hell at different points.
Yeah,
this just has to be absolutely brutal. My heart breaks for them.
I give all the best wishes and positive energy possible to them.
Before we get to AEW, there is one little happy story out there right now. That it's been a rough week for wrestling fans. It really feels like May is not professional wrestling's month. It feels like there's always something in some way that really hits this month hard for wrestling fans and wrestlers. But Shad Gaspar's family was able to raise the $100,000 for the funeral and for being able to take care of that family. And there was a mysterious donor that donated $40,000. And all it said was CTC RIP. And John Cena recently posted a picture that had the initial CTC, which was Cena in Crime Time. Mm-hmm. And it makes many people believe, well, who's got 40K just ticking around to make a donation like that? So the rumor and speculation is it could potentially be Cena. But regardless of who it is, someone helped out in a big way for that family. And it's nice to see and know that they've got a nice little chunk of change that they can don't have to worry about paying for this funeral and don't have to worry in the immediate future of what that family is going to do. And hopefully it helps them recover and get to that next step.
We don't know what kind of life insurance he had or if it would have been, eligible or anything like that, obviously. So, that's great news. I do think that probably is John Cena and hats off to him or hats off to everybody who donated. Ridiculous how much money a funeral like that should even cost. It's just ridiculous.
And I mean,
the funerals are something that are extremely profitable, and it feels like one of those things that should be regulated to the point where they're not allowed to take advantage of people. But unfortunately, they're an incredibly expensive affair.
It's a shame that you have to use a GoFundMe for something like this.
Yeah, and that's not uncommon.
No, it's not at all, and it sucks. But if finding the silver lining in this, if someone like Cena stepped up like that, then that shows a character, especially in the current climate and how everything's going right now, how tight everything has gotten. So to do something like that, I tip my hat to everyone that donated, because that's
everybody that donated, you know,
even if you donate $5.
Yeah, exactly. Because right now, a lot of people, even $5 is a big sacrifice.
And I think it speaks to, I think this really speaks to not necessarily Shad Gaspar, the wrestler, but I think this speaks to the person outside of the ring, what he was able to do, the connections that he made with people. And that led to a lot of positive stories about him, and also his actions in his final moments. I think both of those are why we're seeing the response for him the way we are, because he seemed like a stand-up dude. And it's a shame, but it's good to know that someone like him and his family will at least be taken care of because he was a good person. Yeah. It's not just willy-nilly, but he was a genuinely a good dude that those actions paid off for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care how he was as a wrestler. Was he a good person? And then, by all accounts he was. So really a rough couple things, rough go here.
Yeah, but, you know, we get to shift gears now.
Yeah, it's going to be a little tough, but we'll get there.
Oh, yeah. I think we'll work our way up. So we got AEW's Double or Nothing 2020. This was originally supposed to be held in Vegas, as was last year's, but this was in Daly's Place. We kicked the show off with I liked their video package at the beginning. I liked everyone kind of breaking character, thanking the first responders.
That was very classy. Very classy.
I know some people were a little unsure on the graphic for Shad Gaspar with it being over an ocean, but I don't know did that bug you at all? Did that send any bells and whistles off in your head?
No.
Okay,
I know that's where he had it, but he also, from all accounts, loved the ocean.
Yeah.
So
That's where I kind of look at it as, I don't think they would have done this to be classless. I think this would have been something that they were like, oh, they put some thought into it. And it was a nice way to kick the show off, because I like that they're acknowledging reality and they're saying, we know what's going on. Here's what's happening. And here's a 4-hour wrestling show, 4.5-hour wrestling show to distract you for a little bit.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into the matches. The pre-show match, Best Friends versus Private Party to determine the number one contender. What did you think of this match, Mo? What did you think of Private Party, Best Friends, and the ending?
I thought it was a really good match. It got really good, towards the end. That would have gotten over really big in front of an audience, I'm sure. Obviously, that couldn't happen. That's the shame of it right now. But yeah, I think in front of an audience that would have performed really well. And so I enjoyed the match, the right finish. Private Party lost, but they didn't lose anything. They didn't lose any steam, because it was a really competitive match. I thought they had some really nice, innovative moves.
Yeah, I will say there was a little bit of ring rust on Private Party, but considering the current climate and everything, and then being more or less in the New York area until just recently being able to travel down to Jacksonville, you almost give them a little bit of slack for just having to shake everything off and getting the motors running. I thought the Best Friends looked looked really good, and I think this is a well-earned spot for them. And I think that them being there during this pandemic and having constantly wrestled in different single matches and matches, I think that this is their reward for being there in some ways, is going after the tag team titles.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I definitely think that's fair.
And then we get from the pre-show, we get to the main card with everything going and happening. And we start off with a casino ladder match for a future AEW World Championship match. And we've got the participants are Scorpio Sky, Frankie Kazarian, which the two of them start off. So SCU is battling at the beginning. And then we have Darby Allin, Colt Cabana, Orange Cassidy, Joey Janela, Kip Sabian, Luchasaurus, Jimmy Havoc makes an appearance, Penelope Ford makes an appearance, Marco Stunt makes an appearance, and the surprise entrance. Who was the surprise entrance, Mo, and what do you think of his performance?
Well, now, first off, did I earn the Futurist again? Because I said whoever the surprise entrance is going to win. I did say that in the preview show. I had a sneaking suspicion, like, moments before I saw the man who came out come out. I was like, God, I bet you it's EC3. And then it was Brian Cage, and I was like, ah, that makes sense. Okay, Brian Cage. They booked him very strong. I remember when I was at WrestleMania 31, passing Brian Cage in the street, where he had just come from a workout. And he was just sweating like mad, and he's short, just so wide and racked. And, my first thought when I saw Brian Cage was, well, if there was ever any question, and I don't think there was, we now know for sure there is no wellness policy in AEW.
Yeah.
That guy's just, he's 100% roids and a pair of tights. And especially when you saw him in person like that, where he's just sweating. Even, like, you could tell he's one of those guys. Those guys are those major bodybuilder guys, and they need like 15,000 calories a day. And they sweat when they're just like brushing their teeth. Like, everything, they just sweat constantly. It's kind of gross. He's a good hand. Got a good look, good hand, experienced. I don't know that you need, like, him and Wardlow. You know what I mean? Like you already had that guy with that gimmick. So, you're still there?
Yeah, I'm still there. I'm letting you go. I'm letting you talk.
Sorry, I heard a weird noise there.
Hello.
Oh, that would be the weird noise. But yeah, I don't think Brian Cage. I mean, it's like the good thing is, okay, yeah, he's a little bit well known, and he's got the look and some ability and this and that. And so I guess you can make him your own star, though, because even though he has been on national television, he has never really, it's never been in a prominent spot on a company with any momentum. But I mean, come on, I'm just like, I don't think him and Moxley is. Does anybody see that as money?
I don't. I'll just interrupt here really quick. First off, what it is, what to do. The idea with I saw with it is you want the big introduction to him and you want his stuff with Taz. That's all well and good. I think he's a super talented athlete, but I don't know if that's like with you're the same, Mo. I don't know if that's the direction you want to go. I think the money match right now with the record that he's had is MGF and Mox. I think that's the road that you want to go to right now, you would assume.
I think Brian Cage, and like to go back to the match, I thought the match was a bit of a cluster, but I thought overall I enjoyed the match. I think there was enough in there that I enjoyed. I think Brian Cage is a little bit of a pit stop to get to MJF because they're not doing their next pay-per-view until September 5th.
What's Spider-Fest then?
Yeah. So then this will be, you take Brian Cage, you have him go up Moxley. I imagine this show won't be live, and I imagine you're hoping that All Out is with a crowd, and then that's where you can cash in on MJF. But I think the big thing with this is I'm curious to see how they do, because they're really packed with big guys now. One of the critiques of AEW was they didn't have a lot of big guys. Now they've got Wardlow. They've got
Luchasaurus.
Luchasaurus. They have Hager. They have Lance Archer. So they've Brody Lee, that's six. And if you add someone like a Rusev in, he could be considered among kind of that bigger statues. So you've got a lot of bigger bodies now that you're adding. And I'm really curious to see out of those herds who rises to the top. I think the money match for Brian Cage is Kenny. I think that's personally who I'd like to see him wrestle the most. But it's going to be curious to see how he's presented and how he's used. I wouldn't be surprised if Darby plays a role in costing Brian Cage, because, I mean, Brian Cage murdered him. He took a lot of dumb bumps in this match. But I think ultimately it's going to be leading to Darby Allin versus Brian Cage in a ultimate David and Goliath match.
The man who seemed to hurt the most must have been, though, Joey Janela, as evidenced by the extremely loud profanities that he screamed after taking a move from Cage.
Was that not a call to Cornette in some ways? Because doesn't Cornette usually use that catchphrase in some ways?
I think he was just, who knows. Fryder Fest is not, it's not not their big event. Like, it's not, you know, so that's true. I mean, for the match itself, overbooked as any match. And I was thinking, you know, a 9-man match, that ladder match, they tend to be. I like the rules of being able to win it before people, you know, and having people gradually come down and everything. I think that was a nice twist. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't that different from the WWE ladder matches, which are overbooked. And so it was just kind of the same thing. I tend to like my ladder matches to be, you know, most of the best ladder matches I've ever seen have been like, you know, two teams or two guys, three guys at the top, like most of them, you know, three teams, obviously with the TLCs. But I mean, once you start getting it, and they just keep adding more, and it, you know, it was three and four, now six and eight, now nine. I mean, how many? What were you going to get to? Like 25 man ladder matches? Like, I don't know.
I'm really curious, because I think one of the standouts to me for this was Orange Cassidy. I really enjoy Orange Cassidy's schnick, but at the same time, I don't think they can ever go back to that. He's got to now know the rules for a ladder match. So you can't, you've done this once. Now the next time OC is in a match like this, he can't play dumb. I did not like the Colt Cabana bump where his fingers got pinched.
That looked like an accident.
And that just made me just, oh, I jumped. I was like, nope, I don't like that. I don't like that. Because you can see him rolling around on the ground on pain. Brian Cage is the new number one contender. Any last thoughts on this match?
I think that's it.
You know, I would just say...
Orange Cassidy, for me, I didn't find that as funny. I usually like his... I liked it when he was wrestling. I didn't like the trying to not really climb the ladder stuff. I did want to see the ladder set up and have him put his hands in his pocket and try and climb with his hands in the pocket. We never got that.
That'd be a great spot. I liked him on the back of Brian Cage and him just being so light that Brian Cage can just move up, and how close he came to winning off the back of Brian Cage.
Did you guys think that chip, like, do you think it was actually heavy? There is a debate about this on Review Away this morning. Do you think the chip was actually heavy? I do. Or do you think they were faking it? There's been a little bit of debate about if the chip was heavy or not that they put on Brian Cage.
Oh, dude, I could have lifted that thing, please.
You think so? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
I'll agree with you guys. I thought it was a good ladder match. I really agree with Mo. I think if you're going to give the positives to AEW when they do original stuff, you got to hit the negative. And I thought some of the booking, especially in the comedy match we're going to get to later, was very WWE-like, especially the comedy match we'll get to later, which is some of the level of comedy to it. It was a fun ladder match. It was an entertaining one, but it was a little bit overbooked, definitely. Oh, yeah, it was Jungle Boy and MGF was next. To me,
that was great.
This was a really good match, and I really think it showcased the future of AEW. I think in that ladder match, you had some showcase of the future, but this match really showcased the future, and it showed how, number one, Jack Perry, Jungle Boy, tremendous, but a really show. MGF has got, when we got introduced to him, we knew how good he was in the mic. We're starting to see more and more how good he is in the ring.
He's a very old school type wrestler in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I think this is a pairing, like I said on the preview show for this, I think that there are multiple, this is a rivalry that can span multiple years.
Yeah, and the storytelling should be for multiple years. Jungle Boy never beats him. So when he finally does, much like the Tommy Dreamer Raven thing, when he finally does, it'll be massive. You know, they should have an on-running. This match was so good, though. You know, there was that one spot which looked dangerous as hell, and I was really worried about. But overall, like, very impressed with this match. Excellent job by these guys.
It's a good comparison right there, Mo.
I think this was the match of the night.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a great wrestling match. Both guys look great. You know, yeah, the future very bright, definitely.
I thought, and I just was so impressed with MGF in this. And I thought, after this, how can you not want to do him and Moxley now? Especially they made a point of what his record has been. You know, you have the great graphics with the records and everything like that, and where everyone stands. But they really made a point of saying, like, he hasn't lost since this point. This is where his standings are. It was really hard to walk away out of this and be like, well, he's not the number one contender. And he could even go against Cody if he wanted to and be like, how did I not get a chance
in our TNT but the thing title? Is, Josh, in our preview show, I said that. In our preview show, you? I said, yeah. Yeah, I said this should be MJF should be getting the shot, not Brody Lee. Brody Lee hasn't beat anybody yet.
Yeah.
You know, Brody Lee's beaten Marco Stunt, big deal. MJF has, and the speculation is, and it's still probably this way, they don't want to build him. They don't want to lose what they did with. They don't want to beat Moxley for the belt yet, but they also don't want to beat MJF and have him lose the momentum he's gained from beating Cody and such. So they kind of, in some ways, have almost booked themselves into a corner, but it's undeniable. Yeah. The idea that he's not the number one contender is ridiculous.
He's the number one heel in wrestling right now. There's not even if Japan was going, I think he's the number one heel.
Yeah. I'd like to go back when we said who's going to be the guy of the next decade. He was my pick, guys. Remember, I was Darby Allin and a few others were up there, but that was my pick because it was mainly for how good he is on the mic. He's better in the ring than I knew.
He's a dark horse for rest of the year right now for me after this week, I will say.
Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that not a lot of people talk about, and I brought this up on the previous show, was MJF cut a promo. After he beat Cody, he cut a promo mentioning Moxley. And it really felt like the seeds were being laid and they were going to be building to that. And then MJF couldn't come out. And I know Cody said about 90% of what we're seeing for the card for Double or Nothing was pre-planned. And I think a bunch of this was. But I think a couple things were different. And I think one of them was MJF and Moxley potentially. I don't know if they were going to give it away that quick. But they've said that this is the marquee show for AEW, and I could have seen them going with MJF.
I think they would have gone Brody Lee regardless. When they say 90%, I think they'll, yeah. I think they need to be generous
with that.
Yeah, I think the only difference is where we saw the difference in this was in the
stadium.
The stadium match. That was the thing that was unique for this.
They probably would have been spread out more. My guess is that All Out is they'll do Fyter Fest, they'll do Brian Lee, and then Brian Cage, sorry. And then I would assume at All Out, that's when they do MGF, and then you pull the trigger on MGF right there is my best guess. And they could even do Cody and MGF for the TNT title even.
If they do pull the trigger on MJF, it's possible there. They could also just be thinking if he gets a couple more big wins and is undefeated long enough, then when he does lose to Moxley, it won't hurt him. I think they're just worried about hurting him right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess my thing is, who do you guys think is the ideal guy to beat Mox? Is it MGF or is it Kenny? Because those are the next two guys I see as champion.
It's Adam Page.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too.
I don't know. I have to think about the long-term booking. Like, my pick would be MJF, but Page is a good one. There's a few guys here that you could potentially.
Because you got to think about the people coming in too, right? You have a lot of talent.
Mox should have it for like a year though.
Yes.
Right.
And that makes it really hard when other guys are getting hot around him, because you have to pick and choose. And I do wonder, and I'm going to ask you guys, could MJF take a loss from Moxley now and the storyline be that MJF is gearing himself up to be ready, that the next time he gets a shot, he won't miss? Could that storyline work with MJF?
All out yes, Fyter Fest no. I think you need more time to really build up MGF. And I think that the move that Mox used on Brody Lee, not to step too much on us talking to that, I think that's a really good out. Because, you know, you save someone by not getting the pin. And I mean, even if you look at this match with Jungle Boy, the one thing that I will give a lot of credit, whenever I've watched AEW, and I've mainly been just watching pay-per-views, and you guys have been watching more weekly, but the one thing I will give them credit for compared to what I've seen from WWE this year, and it's the one thing Japan does good, is in a match, you always kind of feel somewhat that both guys get over, or both guys did, like, you don't feel like someone lost in the sense of momentum. Like, Jungle Boy came out of this, you felt positive for the forward progress for Jungle Boy, and you felt a lot more for MGF. I think if you go in and do it the right way, you could feel the same way for MGF if he does lose to Mox.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. They do that really well, and that is something Japan excels at. I mean, you know, the women's title match, I think, is the same thing, where I don't think that hurt Nyla Rose at all. But, you know, she got the win, and it was big for her. So, yeah, they're really good at that.
I think with Nyla Rose, she's someone that we weren't sure where she was as far as placing the card. And she, you know, she raised herself up and definitely earned that title. But her losing the title is almost the best thing for her now to have the chase with it. And she's gotten much better on the mic. She's gotten much better physically as an athlete. And I think so. And she showed that physicality in this. I think it was one of the greatest performances I've seen from her. And I mean, with Jungle Boy and this, like you mentioned, Mo, I love your point about Tommy and Raven. Because I remember as a kid, number one, that was one of my favorite feuds. And when Tommy finally did it, like, oh my God. And you just haven't had that in wrestling for almost 30 years now. So to
that was huge.
With Jungle Boy. Yeah, it was so huge. I don't think Joel can even understand how big of a deal that was, because it's a little bit before his time.
Yeah, no.
He can go back and watch the clips at least. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. But it was really one of the best. I mean, it's just, that's
hidden. Oh, and Sandman. Is that Sandman?
That was Heyman at his best.
Yes.
And that was Tony's favorite promotion was ECW. So it's, you kind of wonder how many storylines from there we're going to see with an updated fresh coat of paint in AEW.
Yeah, I don't know that they were thinking that going into all this, but the storyline is right there. Because now right he's there. Lost twice, but he's so close. You know, yeah, it's going to be great. If they do it right, it's going to be great.
I'm almost getting to the point, too. I'm so used to JR just calling him Jack Perry that I'm starting to call him Jack Perry as well.
I know.
Instead of Jungle Boy.
He actually called him Jungle Boy more in this than he has in the past.
He's getting better. He's getting better.
Yeah. I think he just really thinks, I think that he thinks that saying this is Jungle Jack Perry or you know, and then saying that, mentioning his father, I just think he thinks is more marketable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's all it is. He just thinks, how do we make the most money with him? Tell everybody who he is. Jungle Boy's just some guy.
Yeah, Jack, I mean, it's Jack unfortunate Perry they is, can't you know? Have the Steve Perry at ringside. That would have been nice, but unfortunately,
yeah,
we have what we have. Yeah. But no, I really like this match. I'm interested to see what the star rating it gets from the Observer. I'd assume it's about a 4. I think Grapple right now, Joel, I don't know if you checked Grapple at all, but the last time I checked on Grapple was around a 4 as well. So
yeah.
And it's been so hard. I mean, Meltzer has been trying not to give ratings for matches mm-hmm. during all this, because without a live crowd, it's a completely comparing a match that was great with a live crowd to a match that was great without a live crowd. Though, once again, boy, I mean, it's not a lot of people, but I the fact that they put some people in the ringside and something WWE isn't doing.
Oh, it's huge.
And those people are told to be as loud as possible. It was great, you know, seeing Big Swole get in the face of of Lance Archer and stuff. You know, it adds to the show a lot.
It was so weird seeing Vitor Belfort there. It was so weird.
Oh yeah, I know.
That was tripping me out. In some ways, Vitor Belfort, I thought was more entertaining than Mike Tyson was, because Mike Tyson literally had that yawn, which is a very unfortunate shot by the camera guy.
Just and I bad don't blame timing. The camera guy. I'm sure he was just tired from like travel and different things.
Yeah,
he seemed to really be enjoying the match, but they just managed to cut to him at just the wrong time. And yes, it was unfortunately accidentally hilarious.
Mm-hmm. It was bad timing, unfortunate. But no, this match was great. And this is AEW at its finest right here, and built both guys.
At 22 and 24. I mean, that's it. I mean, and if anything says to me, you know, how the WWE style is stifling, it's a match like this between two young guys who aren't having to go through that system, but are learning to wrestle.
And a thing you just mentioned too, Mo, Taker talked about it on Bill Simmons' pod. Simmons talked about it too during this. He's like, the hard thing for him, and like, he watches it with the son all the time, and he's still a fan. He's like, watching MMA, I thought the fan thing would matter a lot. And he's like, MMA, it didn't matter as much as I thought it would. But he's like, in WWE, it's really hard. And Taker said, I didn't think it would matter until I went out there to talk. And then he's like, this is not good. And he's like, it's led to a lot of frustrations backstage, that knowing this isn't as good as we can be. And he's like, that's why we have as many cinematic matches as we have. So I give the cons and the credit for the measures that they have took, because even when someone like Undertaker's like, yeah, this just isn't working, you know it's not working.
Yeah.
So good for them. And they made something out of it with that Pineapple Pete guy.
Yeah, that was awesome. No kidding.
So, yeah.
Jericho can get anything over. If there's any lesson this year, Jericho can get anything over.
Even a bat, which I didn't know about. I'm like, I text Joe, like, he got a bat over? He's like, yep. I'm like,
he's got a bat over, dude.
Of course. Okay, Joel, what's next?
Next up is Cody taking on Lance Archer, Arn Anderson in Cody's corner, Jake the Snake in Lance's corner, and it's for the inaugural AEW TNT title presented by Mike Tyson,
the Toys R Us belt.
It's
that was unfortunate.
Yeah, because the person that was going to finish the belt, all their resources had to go to helping medical professionals. Like they were using their supplies to work on ventilators and things of that nature. So a championship title belt means nothing.
Far more important stuff, guys. Far more, right?
So
I personally don't think gold plates will help that belt out, to be honest, but they go to four more important things. We'll see.
I think silver plates would actually look good on it.
Yeah, I do too.
I think from just seeing some renditions online of just different colorizations of it, I think you add some color and a little bit of detail to it, I think that will help spruce it up significantly. It's still not the best looking title, but you can do a little bit with the color of it for sure. Mm-hmm.
Right. What'd you guys think of the match itself? It didn't seem like the Tyson thing got as much buzz as I think any of us thought publicly.
I saw it on TSN as such. You know, he didn't really do anything as a thing, though. He didn't hit anybody. He just took his shirt off and intimidated somebody. You know, the match itself, I thought they were having a terrific match until the end, where I thought it got overbooked. And it really the ending fell flat for me personally.
It feels as though a lot of Cody matches recently have a little bit more plunder than it should. And I'm not entirely sure why that's the mindset with him, because I think he's extremely over when you have an audience. And I think it was a little overbooked, and I think you could have shaved 5 to 7 minutes off of it, knocking it down to 15, 16 minutes, and I think that would have helped it as well.
It started in the segment where, for no reason, Jake Roberts, when his guy was in control, gets in the corner, distracts the referee, and then Arn Anderson is supposed to get up and seems to forget that he's supposed to get up and trip him, and waits and takes way forever, and then runs up there like he's remembered, trips him, both guys get thrown out, and then Jake comes back, and at this point I'm going, okay, things are falling apart, it's a little awkward, and it'd been good to them. I liked the win, it was just Cody getting the hell beat out of him by the bigger guy. That worked. Cody's gonna be careful. Like, live crowds are better with him, and we don't want to see him become the Jeff Jarrett.
That's what Jeff Jarrett was
in TNA in AEW, of that plunder overbooked guy, because Jarrett's matches in TNA were plunder and overbooked beyond belief, and it
King of the Mountain
really hurt.
King of the Mountain.
And then, King of the Mountain. Oh, God. Dude, that's so bad.
I'm really curious to see what he does as champion, because I wasn't sure if he was going to win or not. But
I didn't want him to win, because I had the same fear as Mo did.
I don't know if him winning was a problem. I think it was how it was executed. I think because he had lost so many big pay-per-view matches recently that if he, like Mo had said in the preview show, if he'd lost this, then that kind of hurts Cody's credibility. Where if he gets the win, then maybe it kind of helps his credibility, and I feel like Lance can recover enough to maybe even
take. You could tell the story, though, couldn't you, of Cody can't focus on being a wrestler. He's focusing too much on being the businessman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he easily could have done that, and they are to a degree. But I do think that it was getting to the point where, when you know, you're one of your top babyfaces, if not your top babyface, you can't lose all the big matches, because otherwise the fans stop believing in the top babyface, then he loses effectiveness. So this is the one he had to win. I don't think he should have a long reign. I think you should transition it to Archer or somebody else pretty quickly, but I didn't mind him getting the Duke.
Because the thing to tie back into...
Oh, by the way, we never mentioned that. Taz with Cage. If nothing else, Taz with Cage. He's great. Look at the guys they're bringing in as their managers. Jake Roberts, Arn Anderson, Taz, even Tully Blanchard. I mean, these guys can talk.
And a matter of time till Vicky.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was halfway through the show somebody said to her, you're on the heel side, because she was cheering like all the baby face at the beginning and cheering all the heels at the end.
To add to your point, like if him winning the title here now, and then you go into Fyter Fest and he doesn't have a successful title defense, that can be tied into he's not fully focused on this. He was focused on that one match, and then he got caught the next pay-per-view at his first title defense. And that can tie into the story, so you can easily work your way out of from having to have Cody have a long run and having a shockingly short run that leads to your next champion who has a longer run.
Good point. I have one question for you guys as far as Vicky. Not, you know, the AEW is going to be adding so many people from these guys that are cut from the Fed. I wonder if maybe just with their women's division, I don't know how interested she is anymore, but if they would maybe look at Saul Guerrero, and if they were, maybe something with Aiden English, with the two of them together.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. It is logical. Chavo can play a role, you know, maybe. Mm-hmm. As somebody else coming to the ring with them, or, you know, not wrestling much, but some sort of mentor, you know, because they're very family oriented, you know, clearly in what they do. And WWE has dropped the ball on the Guerrero legacy to a lot of degree.
Saul's admitted that.
Pardon me?
Saul said that she didn't really like how she was carried in NXT, that when Sasha and everybody came along, they were kind of pushing her with Paige and Emma, and then they kind of forgot about her.
Yeah, that's the thing. And she is all of it is just the Guerreros are beloved. So I would use that.
And I like Aiden English. I know Joel does. I think he's a talented guy. I don't think he's the number one pick for AEW, but I think there is something there.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Joel, what's next?
Next up on the card, there's a few little things that we can probably squeeze in one shot here. Since time's a little bit tighter for some. We got Chris Statlander taking on Penelope Ford. And to couple it together, we got Dustin Rhodes and Sean Spears in two of the shorter matches from this card, and probably the two of the weaker points in this card. I think I'll kick both off. I think it's good to get Penelope and Statlander experience, because they need to have that repetition. It wasn't a great match at all, but it's one of those things of getting that repetition going and getting that experience. So it's good on that side. The match maybe not as good, and way to kill any and all momentum that Spears had. That was a mistake what they did. That was maybe their biggest mistake that they made.
It was WWE humor with Tully on the underwear. That's Vince humor. That's some good shit.
Vince humor. I hated that. Vince humor. But on the other hand, I think Spears will be fine, because I think he can talk his way out of it.
and say, oh, I wasn't prepared. I didn't think you're going to be there. And I expect them to have a rematch and him get the win. So I think he'll be fine that way. The other match, like you say, it was exactly what it needed to be. Both, you see potential from both girls. You see some impressive moves and some things, and that's great. The potential is there, so they should be out there getting the practice.
I like Kip Sabian coming out in the bandages and everything. He's a guy I really liked, so I hope they do more. This is the first time I've seen him with Jimmy Havoc and Cruz and Ben Ford. I like the idea of that stable. I think there's some potential there.
I loved Havoc's suit, like the blood stain on the white. Oh, that was so cool.
I like that, and I like Sabian's promo before the ladder match. I thought he had a good promo, and I think
he did.
You have something there. I don't quite know what it is, but it's something that you can start moving around and figuring out.
No, I don't disagree. 100%.
On to the next match. On to the next match. We've got a no disqualification, no count out, women's world title match. We've got Nyla Rose defending and taking on Sheeta. Josh, what did you think?
Like I said, I think the right person won it. I'm happy Sheeta won it. I think the one difference for her compared to, I forget her name, the other Joshi girl, she can speak English a lot better, first of all, which is huge.
And Riho. Yeah.
Riho, yeah, compared to Riho. Riho's great, but Riho, she's not, the language barrier isn't working as good for her, and she hasn't have the charisma that Asuka has to not have English as well. So that part's a huge plus. I like I said, I was really impressed with Rose in this, really showing her aggressive side. I think she was able to get herself over as a huge heel and a huge power force. It was the thing that was the most impressive to me, and I thought it was the right time for her to lose the title. And I think I think the women's division is really growing. And like I said, I haven't really watched the TV yet, but I watched some stuff from Britt, and it seems like Britt's kind of found her character. Nyla's found her character. I think the women's division is getting a nice place because everyone's finding their characters. And I really thought Nyla did in this match.
Yeah, give them time. Give them time on their women's division. I mean, be patient with it. You know, they're gonna get there, and Nyla's gonna be fine. I'm not sure how long it'll be before she gets the belt back. I feel like it probably won't be very long. But yeah, I mean, it's I mentioned you know, Riho and Rose was like Kong and Gail King, and this is too. It's just that idea. It's the second match like we saw with Archer, but the second match is just the powerhouse destroying the babyface forever, but the babyface never giving up and fighting back, and it works. It's classic pro wrestling. It works, and I enjoyed the match quite a bit, and I do think the passing of Hanakamura probably. I'm not sure if that changed the finish or not. It would not surprise me if it did. It felt like that made the storyline the right thing to do to put Sheeta on top, definitely.
It's probably the connection there. Did you guys talk about that at the top of the pod?
Yeah, at the top of the show we did. Yeah. Do you have any thoughts you wanted to add?
Man, it's just
the worst.
Bullying, man. It's just a shitty week overall. With everything that happened, and I guess my biggest thought from it, I was just shocked how big it got, the story. And it's a terrible story, but like Variety was covering it, and People Magazine, and Entertainment Tonight, and it's like, and I guess it's because I didn't realize how big this Terrace House was. I think that's a big part of it, is how big Terrace House was that she was connected to. But I mean, Joel got a chance to see her in MSG, and from what I've understood, in Stardom, she was if not number one, she was number two on the card there. So the future was really, really bright for her. People thought that she could be a major impact in a women's division. So, yeah, I just absolutely gutted by the news of it. And
she's one sucks. Of the two women that they were planning to build the company around.
Yeah. It hurts that she had so much confidence. All the interviews I've heard, from like post-wrestling's Japan correspondent that got to know her, they said, like, it's kind of one of those surprising things. And I think for this, when you're ever close to someone, it's surprising. But they were saying that she was just so confident, and she was just the last person they expected it from. So I know there's some images and stuff online that are pretty graphic. I've stayed away from those. I don't know if you guys have. I'm assuming you have. It's just an unfortunate week. I've had a few friends be like, oh, tell me about this wrestler, and I'm like, unfortunately, I can't tell you a lot. I think I definitely would have gotten to know a lot about her as time would have gone on, but she was just so young, and I think that's also the heartbreaking thing about it. And I mean, I look at someone like Naya. Naya had a really good post, and she's someone that deals with the bullying more than anybody. And Naya, you know, we have jabs at her here and there about how she's not safe in the ring, but the jabs at Naya are more physical of her online, which is totally inappropriate. And I've always given credit to Naya how well she's handled the online bullying from assholes that get at her for physical appearance or whatever reason. And she had a powerful post on her Twitter just talking about how she's dealt with the bullying and stuff like that. And it's unfortunate that this is one where the bullying finally got to someone and they couldn't deal with these pieces of shit online.
Yeah. You know, it's totally fair to judge Nyla for her work and the danger in there. Judging her for anything else, physical appearance, no.
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 So, yeah, it's really shitty. I wish that we didn't have to talk about it. I wish that we could have seen the rise of this girl in stardom. And I mean, for us, maybe it wouldn't have been stardom. Maybe it would have been talking about her in I mean, the thing is, though, like some of these girls in Japan, like we started hearing about Io Shirai before she got to NXT. Like the word was out. Io Shirai may be the best wrestler in the world. She had the best moonsault out of any wrestler in the world. So we started hearing those kind of things. I think if she would have gotten to that level, we would have heard it. It's the same with Asuka. I remember.
And AEW is going to be using a lot more Japanese women as time goes on.
I'm sure Kenny was pretty familiar with her, just with how familiar he was with everybody in stardom. So I feel for everyone that just knew her. And it seems that she had her definite friends in it. I just feel, I mean, the one cool thing is kind of like what I dealt with Kobe in some ways of between this and Shad. I saw that in the basketball community, but you're really getting to see the wrestling community and how positive it can be. It can be a toxic environment at sometimes, obviously with this included, but you can also see the positive side with the fundraising for Shad and how they came together during this. So there can be a positive side with, you know, our little extended wrestling family. So that's been the one positive thing out of it all.
After she posted what looked like the suicide note, she had an outpouring of, love come to her on social media, and at that point she probably wasn't looking, and that's, you know, just one of the many sad parts.
When the voices were there, she wasn't able to hear.
So
it's really unfortunate. I guess we'll talk about the main event now.
The two main events. Yeah.
So there's no easy transition, but just RIP and our biggest thoughts from One Fall. Joel, want to take us on?
Just slowly drag along as we have main event. We had Jon Moxley defending his title against Mr. Brody Lee. I guess I'll go first. I thought this was a good match. I thought this was Brody Lee's best match. It lacked a bit of a build. I really liked the finish. I really, really liked giving Moxley different ways to finish an opponent. And not only that, but it ties back into his MMA training heading into the Jericho match. So it's not just dropped. It's being a reference to at another point. I don't know where you go with Brody Lee next, but I feel like Moxley is your world champion until you decide to move on from him, but I'm okay with the finish, and I thought they did good together. I thought it was every other hardcore spot that Nyla and Sheeta didn't do.
That is for sure. I'll let you go, Mo.
Okay. I think they did a really it was a really good brawl. I think they did a nice job protecting Brody Lee. That he didn't tap out, he was passed out, and he got some juice. Yeah, this looked like he was surprised he had lost, but I didn't feel like this is 100% over for him, so they protected him. Meanwhile, you got a dominant champion. How about that for a change? You know, that's something that seems to be a rare thing nowadays in wrestling. having a dominant world champion. So somebody beating, again, Moxley will be huge because he's a dominant world champion. So, yeah, I think it was a really solid match. Again, would have been really – yes, the build was rushed. Yes, it would have been great to have that in front of the crowd, but I think they did a really nice job. Like, I'm very impressed with the effort of both men.
So my thing is – sorry, Joe, I just want to say, you got to figure out what you're doing with this Brody Lee character. They kind of had the little Vince things again. It's like, he hates people sneezing and stuff. I think get away from the anti-Vince stuff of he's a Vince McMahon character and get more to the Dark Order stuff. And it seemed like they were going that way more. But, like, again, beforehand, they're like, oh, he hates people that sneezes and yawns. Like, let's get away from that and just focus more on Brody Lee, the wrestler, and get away from that kind of stuff.
Well, again, I think to a degree it's tough, the Dark Order, because you can't have all the people. Like, we haven't seen Eva Luna and Grayson for a while because of everything that's going on. So, I mean, that affects it as well, too. So, I mean, I think a lot of the stuff that you can do with the character, we will see a little further down the line when all of this passes us, if it ever does. Thank you. Please do it.
Mm-hmm. Good match, though. And I agree with Joe. I love the choke of the ending. It gives him multiple ways to get someone, and I think that's always a positive instead of just having your one big move.
I really like that he's using the Gotch pile driver. I really, really, I like that move. And that's a nod to Suzuki from New Japan. So that's a nice little inside wink for anyone that pays attention to both AEW and New Japan.
Yep. And like I said before, I think he should be facing MJF. I don't think it should be Brian Cage yet, but I guess we'll see where it goes.
Well, they've officially announced that it's Brian Cage and Moxley at Fyter Fest.
So is he cashing in this chip? Or like?
I think you just automatically. I don't think it's a cash in thing. I think you just get the.
You just get the title match. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Well, then I mean, I'm sure it'll be a good match. But Cage is a really good wrestler, but I think their styles kind of clash in a way. But Mox is a good wrestler. Cage is a good wrestler. I'm sure they can make it work.
The thing I had said this earlier, you missed it, is I don't think you need Wardlow and Brian Cage. know what I mean? I think you can have too many guys with too similar a gimmick, and that's something they got to watch out for.
Is Wardlow, I haven't seen Wardlow wrestle, obviously you guys have. Is he, like, you know, the one thing about Cage is he's kind of a luchador in some ways. He can do some of those. Can Wardlow do those moves as well?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's the only kind of thing that's different.
I feel like Brian Cage, to a degree, could kind of be like Scott Steiner, like a less...
He used a screwdriver, which I was very happy with, because that was my No Mercy finisher back in the day.
That's a great move, so damn dangerous. But oh man, like nothing looks better than the screwdriver or the Steiner driver or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I love it.
It's awesome.
I text Joel. I was like, screwdriver. I was like, this is the best. I love this move. I love when Scotty used it.
Because I know
it's a very dangerous move.
I know that he has a connection to the Lucha Bros, so I wonder if that's how they'll differentiate. Because they've done a great job making everyone feel like their own little person in a lot of ways. So curious to see how they make this Brian Cage feel like his own little person. And I think a big factor in that is who his manager is.
Does Taz get a stable, do you guys think?
I hope so. I hope so,
man. I have a Heenan family with him.
It's weird because I'm really enjoying his announcing, but you know what? You can get him on TV a lot more in this role, and he's such a good talker. And you know what he needs now is he needs like Samoa Joe, and then what they got to do is half face paint him, and then give him a knife, and then
a van stolen in a van.
Yeah. Oh man.
And then have the best wrestler in the world play Halloween for 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so absolutely. They won't do that.
No. Maybe Okada can. What character can he be? That's a racial stereotype now. I don't know, but maybe they could do that now. You know.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We have Nigel McGuinness here at the same time and Kurt Angle, but don't worry about it. We won't use him the right way. And AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels and Kazarian. Christian Cage, I think, is still there around that time. No, Christian's gone, but still. Yeah. Still. Yeah. Yeah.
Again, I'll go back to the fact that they had Samoa Joe. So great, so hot. He's a one-time champion for them. Once. Fairly early in his career, and then he was there for years and never won it again. How do you do that?
Well, and if you remember, not to make this a TNA thing before we get this main event, he was the hottest thing ever. I mean, when Kurt it was like, holy shit, Kurt and Joe, this isn't going to get any bigger. Like, they had done such a good job with him, and then after that, it's just like, oh, you know, like, maybe we put, yo, bro, what if we, like, get him kidnapped, bro? Well, what's the payoff? I don't know. He'll just disappear for 4 weeks and then come back with a scar on his face, bro. Okay, sure.
That's pretty much accurate.
What if we take Dustin Rhodes and have him have a rat named Misty? Yeah, sure. Let's do that. We'll put him with Sinister Minister. We'll have him against Sinister Minister. Sure. Let's do that, guys. TNA in the late aughts.
Hey, we've never done a review of the history of all of TNA's screw ups. Oh, we've never done that pod. Like that'll be a 3-hour pod for someday in the future to go back our favorite and least favorite, you know, things that TNA ever did.
Go to the moment you stopped watching TNA. Because I know the moment, exact moment I have. I'll save it for that pod. I know the exact moment, like that Peter Griffin meme, done. I'm like, I know the exact moment I was done. I'm like, nope, I'm done. That's it. That's it for me. No more TNA. All right, Joel, you want to talk about actually something really good, though?
Yes, let's get there. I'm going to let Mo go first on this, but I'll
throw it over. I don't want to go first. I'm curious what you guys think.
It was fine. It was fun. It was a fun match.
It was amazing. I loved it. I have never laughed so hard. At this point, with everything that's gone on, I tip my hat for them ending it this way, because that was a lot of fun. I was highly sports entertained. There were a few little things here and there that you could probably make gripes about as time goes.
Like the drowning.
I think a lot of people were complaining about the drowning after the what happened with Shad Gaspard. It didn't even occur to me until I got a message from.
It didn't occur to any of us. Joel and I said the same thing. It was like, unfortunately. Didn't even think about that. I'm like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was such a different context. I think I just, you know, and done so much, what do you call it? It was, you know, such an obvious comedy thing. So yeah, I didn't put it together, but then afterwards and somebody mentioned it to me. It's like, I wouldn't have done that. And I'm like, why? And then it's like, oh yeah, that probably wasn't the right thing.
Not ideal.
The one thing with this match is I felt like there was comedy, but there were moments where you had an actual brawl wrestling style moment. This isn't a wrestling match by any means. This is something completely different. And I thought they did a really good job with this. I thought that one winged angel at the end was crazy.
Oh my God.
I love Jericho challenging the play, like something simple and silly and just downright dumb, and you know that Jericho's going to get his heat back. Everyone in Inner Circle is going to get their heat back. I thought I was sold from the minute those intros started.
Yeah, that was good. I like that in the bar fight, by the way. Those are my two favorites before Moro goes. The intros I was in, and then the bar fight was my favorite part of the whole thing.
And when Hangman came out in the horse, it just...
Yeah, and then Sammy's eyes.
And the golf cart again.
Yeah. Okay, Mo.
All right. I hated the Money in the Bank match, right?
Yeah.
So I hated the Money in the Bank match.
How do you feel about the Money in the Bank match?
Oh, I hated that. So
it feels. You didn't like Boneyard either. You didn't like Boneyard either. You didn't like the Boneyard or the.
I didn't mind it so much. I like I said about the Boneyard, I could take it once. The same thing with the Bray. You know, I didn't love him. And so it feels hypocritical to say that I like this, but I don't know if it was better done than the Boneyard. It was so much better done. The execution was just so much better. And I do think the fact that there was moves in it that still looked dangerous and still parts that looked like a fight, even though there's obviously a lot of comedy and spots, but they just didn't feel as tacked on. Like when Doink showed up, that's just tacked on and
it's not funny. It doesn't serve anything. Whereas, you know, when they use the chalk line on,
that's funny. When he hit the elbow on the mascot, I howled.
Yeah, like stuff like that. Like it, the execution was so much better. So yes, it's sports entertainment, and I always said this about AEW. AEW is a sports entertainment. I thought they would be a sports show. They're not, but they're more sports than WWE. They have, for me, they have the right mix. WWE is too far into the sports entertainment. Japan is totally sports, which is fine for Japan. Well, not totally sports, but very sports entertainment. Sports. And then they kind of fall in the middle, which is a nice balance for me. And one of the reasons why I enjoy it so much. Yeah, I mean, it feels hypocritical, but I really did enjoy the match quite a bit, because there was a lot of the difference is the match had a lot of like great athletic moves. You know, mm-hmm. We didn't see a lot of great athletic stuff in the Money in the Bank match. You know, this one had like the stuff that happened in the barroom fight, brawl fight with Jake, and the way they did the buckshot lariat, and just the backflips and different things that Paige did, like all of it, Guerrero and coming off the goalpost for Matt, and like there's just a lot of really cool athletic spots, enough of a real fight feel that it didn't feel completely like it's phony, whereas Money in the Bank to me was, and I think it also helps that it wasn't for any sort of title, you know, or anything that, yeah. You know, it was just a fun thing, whereas Money in the Bank is technically for something important. I think that bothered me, and the fact that Otis won it bothered me because it wasn't a dominant win. Here it's a dominant win. There's a one winged angel, you know, through something, then it's a clear pin. Not some guy standing there and all of a sudden something falls to him and it's like, okay, so that's a banana peel victory. You know, the other guy slips on a banana peel and you get the win. So just all of it, just as far as like better execution, I really had a lot of fun with the match. So I'm like I say, I'm getting really to the point where that doesn't mean I want another one. Maybe I could see another Stadium Stampede in 2 or 3 years. I'm not looking for it right away, but it was fun.
I liked Money in the Bank, but I didn't like, as I said in the pod, I didn't like the actual Money in the Bank. There were some gags in between that I find funny. I would agree with you, Mo. The stuff with Doink or the Brother Love stuff, I hated that. I didn't like it. I liked the stuff with Vince. I kind of liked the stuff in the weight room, that kind of stuff I liked. But the stuff that I liked in the Money in the Bank is stuff that they did in this. The way they used the surroundings, that's the stuff I liked in Money in the Bank, is when they use the surroundings correctly. And they did such a good job using surroundings correctly. That bar fight is like one of the best bar fights I've seen, whether it be a movie or not. It was so well done. And the execution of the milk and the whiskey at the end was just so well-natured between these two guys and our tag team partners. I thought it was so good. Or even just Hager sitting next to them and they're like, you know, they're going to kick each other's ass. And then it accelerates that way. And that one win angel, I still am just like, that may be the craziest move in wrestling I've seen in a long time. Like I literally watched it at 11 o'clock and just yelled out, holy fuck. And I don't do that very often watching wrestling. I just like yell like, holy fuck. Cause it just seemed like they fell forever.
Yeah, it was huge, man. It was the type of thing. You'll be going back and showing these things. And it didn't have somebody throwing somebody off the top of a rope of a roof, yeah, thinking he killed.
Black and Gray didn't die for your slander of Money in the Bank, Mo.
What's that?
Or Black and Ray didn't die for your slander of Money in the Bank.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, it was the next night on Raw when they said
ball.
The next night on Raw when they said. Oh, he didn't know that there was a place. He thought he was actually killing them. That I went, I'm done with WWE. Like that was like, I haven't looked like that's so terrible, so bad. You know, nothing like that in this. Nothing that takes it away. So yeah, really fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that ballroom brawl was so good. I think you said it right. It's the stuff that did work in Money in the Bank was all of this. It didn't have most of the stuff that didn't work. And it helps. You can clearly see the guys have the creativity. And that helps.
Yeah.
Everybody stays to within their character, which is in WWE, for whatever the spot they need, the character will be, if they need a spot because they think it's funny and it's not what that character would do, they'll do it anyways. Here, everybody knows their character and stays within the character.
Some good shit.
This was some good
shit. You got to tip your hat to Sammy. Sammy was the biggest star of this from Inner Circle.
Sammy's so awesome. Another guy just young. Just awesome. Great future.
And just from the horse spot to the sprinklers to him waking up to realizing he's like, I won. I'm the only one left standing. And then realizing that he's being circled by five other sharks. And then Neo makes his return. You thought you killed Vanguard, but there's another one. And it's coming for you. I love the commentary in this. I love that they piped the crowd's reaction into this. It just helped make it feel more complete.
Oh, Tony Schiavone was, I think for JR, this is a little bit much, clearly not his thing, but Tony Schiavone was having a blast watching.
And Excalibur.
This. Yeah. Oh, and Excalibur. Yeah. But I knew Excalibur would, but Tony Schiavone, oh, he loved it.
JR needs to go, by the way. He's had a few lines in this. I'm like, yeah, JR, it's time to go almost.
I wonder how the conversation went with Tony Khan and Chet, his father, because just going in and being like, so we want to do this match in your stadium and break stuff. And it's kind of like, are you okay
but
with that?
But they're going to break anything. I was like, I'm not going to lie. When I saw that pro shop, I'm like, man, I fucking hope they throw that pro shop window so bad. I wanted it so bad. I was like, please throw it through the pro shop window. Do it. And they did. Obviously, they didn't do it. I wanted that so bad.
I thought this was an absolute victory, this match, for everyone involved. I think, like Mo said, you saw everyone's creativity. It was 45 minutes. It was nearly an hour long, and it did not feel like an hour long match.
Oh, it didn't drag at all.
The suplex with Guevara and one of the Bucks. And
they messed up the broadcast in there, though. They should have said he could go all the way. That was a mistake on the broadcast side.
That's
I was
true.
Disappointed in that. They should have said he could go all the way, but they didn't. I was a little disappointed in that as a broadcaster.
And then when he spiked Guevara at the end, it was like
just that's a celebration, and he kicked Rick Knox.
That was so great.
Yeah.
So funny.
See, this is the thing. This is my last point. Then we can get to the show overall. I just think this is what wrestling can be sometimes. It doesn't have to be a 45-minute serious bloodbath of a feud that both these men hate each other, want to murder each other. Sometimes wrestling can be a stadium stampede. Sometimes it can be Moxley versus Brody Lee. Sometimes it can be Moxley versus Kenny Omega in the Lights Out match. Wrestling can take many forms and take different avenues, and the goal should always be, is what I'm seeing on TV entertaining?
Well said.
I thought I was entertained by the end of this.
Well said. I agree with that.
Yep. Me too. 100%.
Show.
I think overall. I said like thumbs in the middle. I think it wasn't a bad show, but it wasn't like a great show. It was like it did its job, but it didn't like go to the top of the roof for me.
I'll go higher. I'll go thumbs, not all the way up, but
Orange Cassidy thumb.
Yeah, not quite all the way up, but I think the fact that you ended with such a good match and something that entertained me so much helped a lot. So. Definitely thumbs up, but just not two thumbs up. One thumb, one Orange Cassidy thumb up is a good way to put it. You're right.
I'm one Orange Cassidy thumb up as well. I thought that because I was sitting there, I was kind
of 7 out of 10. Put it that way.
Yeah. It's 7 out of 10. Wrestling's not the same without the crowd. I feel like this show proved that. While you can have people screaming, it's still very much lacking the ebbs and flows from an audience where they'll get really hot for something and then you can tell when they're just not into something and you miss those peaks and valleys.
Yep, definitely.
And disagree with you there.
So and then the ones went. Did you guys confirm that Fyter Fest is free on BR Live then?
I'm not sure.
I'm not. I think it may, because last year it was free. So I imagine it may follow suit. That was supposed to be their first show in London. So that was their. That's a bit of a disappointment. But obviously they can't do that. What do they got? What did they reveal? Ted Turner's house is on the TNT title. So,
what?
Yep. The house is Ted Turner, one of Ted Turner's main houses.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cody was saying that's one of his favorite spots because that's where CNN and TBS and everyone was formed, and across the street is where they used to wrestle, I believe. I believe that's what Cody said, so that's why the house is on one of the side plates. Moxley described the backstage as like a post-WrestleMania feel. Everyone was high-fiving each other and really high up on everything that they did. It really feels like this is a family that's working together to put on a show.
I definitely think that's the case, for sure.
I agree.
Wednesday, last thing, we have a pep rally to look forward to as the Inner Circle tries to rebound. So Chris Jericho will be at a pep rally.
You know, it'll be entertaining.
I'm all for that.
Chris Jericho is just the most entertaining dude.
Mo, is he the GOAT? Is he actually the GOAT? Just because I can't think of anyone that's free. Like, we were designing the other day of, like, where does he go? Right? I know this is a conversation for the day, but, like, you know, if you're going on like the grand scheme of things and you got your Michaels and your Hogans and your Austins and Takers and Rocks up there, but when you see the way that he's evolved his character consistently and the big part in the history now he's going to have with AEW, and just it's hard to know it. I don't know where you put him in like a list.
Yeah, it's really tough to know. I'd say the thing is he the GOAT? Oh, damn it. Damn it, that's a rough question, dude. Because
I know.
You know what? For entertainment and longevity, yeah, right? It's like, yeah, for entertainment and longevity. It's like, is Gordie Howe the GOAT? Because he was great for so many more years than anybody else. But yeah, he wasn't, but other people had years that were better than him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is he the GOAT? And it's kind of like Jericho's the same thing. Like, he's been so entertaining for so long. Whereas, you know, I mean, The Rock was great, but he was only there for a little while. I mean, Hogan, even Hogan wasn't as entertaining for as long as what we see now with Jericho. So for pure entertainment, he might be the GOAT. Overall, I don't know. We
Mount
Rushmore's, and I don't know. I don't see Jericho like that, but he is just so great.
I know.
So much fun.
I know. It's a conversation that you kind of have to have as it's starting to go, because it's funny, like WWE released that documentary on him, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And like the end of it is him training Wade Barrett in NXT. And that doesn't even seem like it's not even half of the Jericho book now.
No, it really isn't.
It almost seems like you started his career then, really.
I guess part of the problem with me not putting him in there is because I look at him and I think, who's he influenced into the industry? Like, he doesn't feel like you can look at a guy like Shawn Michaels and go, oh, okay, you can see who is influenced,
mm-hmm.
you know? But it doesn't – Rey Mysterio, it's like, oh, his influence, you can see it. I don't feel like I see it in the same way with Jericho, but that's partially because he's just so damn unique that mm-hmm. nobody else could replicate it.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's a hard one to, and that's why Joel and I have been pondering it the last few days. So I just interested to kind of put the worm into your brain a little bit of it, because it's an interesting thought of like, well, he's got to be in there, but where the hell do you put him in that conversation?
Don't try and put stuff in my brain. It's not meant to be.
Well, okay, it's not
meant to be used that way.
Put a joke into our brain and get us out of here.
Pardon me?
Put a joke into our brain and get us out of here then.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. No, I'll give you a joke. Okay. No, this is all right. Guy, a businessman, he goes into a bar and he sits down and comes over and it's a robot that's serving him. And the robot asks him what he'll have, and he says, I'll have a martini. And the robot says, that's fine, sir. May I ask? He goes, gets him the martini, brings it back, and he says, sir, may I ask, what's your IQ? And the man says, 130. And the robot says, oh, 130. Well, I'd be happy to talk to you about metaphysical physics or the theory of relativity or high finance or anything you'd like. So they have a nice conversation about high finance and some different philosophical things, and it's kind of neat. The man gets into his car, and he's about to leave, and he thinks, that was kind of strange. He's kind of curious. So he takes off his – he messes up his hair a little bit. He takes off his jacket. He takes off his tie. He takes off his jacket. He goes back into the bar, and he sits down. He says, robot comes back over and says, excuse me, sir, what do you have? And he says, I'll have a whiskey. Robot goes and gets him the whiskey, comes back, brings him back and says, sir, if I ask you, sir, what is your IQ? And, the man says, 110. So the robot says, I'll be more than happy. If you'd like to talk, we can talk sports. We can talk cars. We can talk about, woodworking or anything around the house and those type of topics if you'd like to. And they have a nice conversation about the NFL. So the man gets back into his car, and now he's really, really curious about where this could go. So, he's looking around in his car, and he finds this old leather jacket, and he takes that, he puts that on, and he undoes a couple things. And in his glove compartment, he's got a baseball cap, and he puts the baseball cap on. And he goes back in, and the robot comes over and says, what do you have? And he says, I'll have a beer. And the robot goes over and gets him a beer, comes back, says, sir, if I may ask you, what do you know your IQ? And he goes, 90. The robot says, so, when did you decide to vote for Trump?
Oh my god. Wow.
Too long?
Again.
Most of my jokes are pretty short.
Yeah, that was a good one though. I'll give you that. Did it lack in substance?
I like it. You didn't see that coming, did you?
No. Did not. All right. Anything else, Agile?
No.
Okay. Well, everyone, thanks
for listening. How do you top that, right?
No. Thanks for listening to AEW, everyone. Continue to stay safe out there, please. Until next time, hopefully next week's a better week in the world of professional wrestling. Enjoy the day, people.
Goodbye. And good night. Bang.